John 14, 27. Brethren, this is a message for all of us. Peace I leave with you. My peace I give to you. Not as the world gives, do I give to you. Let not your hearts be troubled, neither let them be afraid. You heard me say to you, I'm going away, and I will come to you. If you loved me, you would have rejoiced because I'm going to the Father, for the Father is greater than I. Now I've told you before it takes place, so that when it does take place, you may believe. I will no longer talk much with you, for the ruler of this world is coming. He has no claim on me, but I do as the Father has commanded me, so that the world may know that I love the Father. Rise, let us go from here. So, Jesus, you see it, 28. You heard me say to you, this is what he's saying to his disciples, these 11 guys, I'm going away. That's what you heard me say. And you know what? They feel it. They feel staggered. Their hopes, their expectations about what's going to happen, they're collapsing. We thought he was going to take the throne. We thought he was going to reestablish the kingdom. And then you know what he done? He says he's going away. He says, you know what? From this point forward, I'm not going to talk much with you guys. In other words, from here on out, anyhow, he still is going to say John 15, 16, and then he's going to pray in 17. And after that, yeah, there's very little that's recorded. And of course, then, you know, the mob comes and they haul him away, and then he's on trial. And so he says that the ruler of this world, he's coming. I'm not going to talk much with you. But you know what? With all the way that these guys are staggered and just thinking their world is falling down around them, what he says is, boys, things are good. In fact, things are exactly on course. Let not your hearts be troubled. This is what he says in 27. And what you and I need to do is we need to personalize this. Because the truth is, look, you can sit here today. I know this. Something's coming in your life where this is going to be pertinent. Let not your hearts be troubled, neither let them be afraid. They're afraid. And if you, listen, think about it. You're Peter, there's Jesus in front of you. Which one of them do you think has more concern about the events that are unfolding in the moments ahead? I mean, if you basically figure in the next 24 to 48 hours, which one of these guys ought to be, if you really considered the facts, which one of them ought to be more full of fear? Which one ought to be more afraid? Which one ought to be more anxious? Jesus has 10,000 times more reason to be afraid. And you know, but what you have to recognize is this. They're looking at Jesus. One of the things we can't see here is that when Jesus says, my peace I give to you, you have to recognize he's saying that. And there are tones in how he's saying that. And there is an expression on his face that would have communicated that exact peace right in the face. No man is ever going to know the horrors of the cross. Because even if you've been in hell for 10 million ages, you still don't know what it is to take the fullness of the sins of Abraham. If you can number the stars, you can number your children. I mean, the children of God are how many? And if you take all the sins of all those people, and whatever the payment was that God demanded in payment for all of his people to be freed, and Jesus was going to suffer in the darkness of the sun not shining there, forsaken of God on that cross for 3 hours, somehow in 3 hours he was going to pay a sufficient price, and Jesus is going to be there, and he is going to be hanging on that cross. You just take Jesus just a few hours, and that's where he's going to be. And he's communicating peace. And you see, peace I leave with you. My peace. Jesus can't. There's no way he could have been talking about his peace if dread and nervousness were just engulfing him. And he says, I give to you. You have to get that. He's not just saying, hey guys, I'm at peace. And you should be too. He says, I'm giving it to you. You see that? My peace I give to you. Not as the world gives do I give. He's giving them. Jesus, this is one of the things that you need to recognize. Folks, Jesus doesn't count peace to be a trivial part of the gospel. It's one of the central ideas. It's one of the central realities. It's a central offer of the gospel. Now, let's think about this. What does the Lord mean when he says, my peace? What does he mean by peace? Let me ask you this. What's the opposite of peace? The Bible basically uses the term peace two ways. And so I'm looking for the opposite. What's the opposite? What's the antonym of peace in both the ways it's used in the Bible? Hostility. So there's one way that peace is used where the opposite is hostility or what? Enmity or what? War. The opposite of peace is war. How about the other way that it's used, which is the way Jesus is using it? It's the opposite of what? Anxiety, exactly. And so just as we're thinking about the meaning, and think about this. When we're talking about peace that has to do with war, well, that's outside of myself. When it has to do with hostility, that's outside of myself. If I'm at war with God, that's a reality that is factual outside of myself, where anxiety is something that is true within me, something I experience. And so that we just need to recognize there are two ways that peace is used. One way has to do with the opposite of war. One way has to do with the opposite of anxiety. When we're talking about that which has to do with hostility and war, that is an objective. It's outside of me. Where there is a subjective which has to do with my experience. And so we recognize the two ways. This is very obvious. It comes at us all over in Scripture. One has to do with the relationship that I have with God. One has to do with the way I feel. And so what some classic passages that have to do with the objective peace. Romans 5:1. Since we have been justified by faith, we have peace with God through our Lord Jesus Christ. And if you said, well, it's not really clear to me, does that have to do with our relationship with God, or does that have to do with the anxiety or the fears that I feel within? Well, all you have to do is go a few verses later and you get this. For if while we were enemies, we were reconciled to God by the death of his son, much more now that we are reconciled, shall we be saved by his life. So we see, it's got to do with being an enemy and being reconciled. And then you have Ephesians. Listen to this. In Christ Jesus, you who were once far off. So you were far off. So your relationship with God was far removed. Your relationship with the people of God, far removed. But you've been brought near. How? By the blood of Christ. For he himself is our peace. He's made us both one, Jew and Gentile, broken down in his flesh the dividing wall of hostility by abolishing the law of commandments expressed in ordinances, that he might create in himself one new man in place of the two, so making peace, and might reconcile us both to God in one body through the cross, thereby killing the hostility. And he came and preached peace to you who are far off and peace to those who are... So you get the idea. Peace. Peace has to do with hostility against God. It has to do with no longer being at war with God. And then you have the way that Jesus used it in John 14:7, where it speaks of that different peace, that peace that's the opposite of a troubled, fearful heart. It's that subjective, experiential peace. And just two of the classic examples that I can think of is this, Isaiah 26:3, you keep him in perfect peace, whose mind is stayed on you because he trusts in you. And then again, Philippians 4:6. Don't be anxious about anything. You see the anxiety. There's the opposite. Don't be anxious about anything, but in everything by prayer and supplication with thanksgiving, let your requests be made known to God. And the peace of God, which surpasses all understanding, will guard your hearts and minds. The thing about it is, Isaiah says, you will keep him in perfect peace whose mind is stayed on you. Philippians says, this peace of God which surpasses all understanding will guard your hearts and minds. You see, the kind that Jesus is talking about is the kind that it's in our minds. It's in our hearts. It's that inner peace. And the first peace, the peace with God, the second peace is what Philippians called it, the peace of God. So you've got peace with God, the peace of God. It's possible to have peace with God and not feel peace inside. But is it possible to have the opposite? Is it possible to have the opposite? Is it possible to not have peace with God and yet have peace within?
Oh, if you're just thinking of a feeling of peace, then yes, about putting me.
Is it possible to not have peace with God and yet have Jesus' peace? No. If you feel peace and you're not at peace with God, remember what Jesus says? Not as the world gives, do I give to you. You see, the world has a peace. We need to remember that. And so if we feel that, the fact is that peace with God is the very basis for the peace of God. It's the very basis for feeling rest in the soul. And so one of the things that I want to emphasize here is this. I've done what is so often done. I want to talk about what's opposite of peace. But you know that both uses of peace in the scriptures, the main emphasis is not on the negative, it's on the positive. You say, what do you mean? Well, just this. If you really focus on the positive aspect of this objective peace, it's got to do with harmony of relationship. Listen, do you know what peace with God means? It doesn't just mean that I'm not at war with him and now we're kind of in a neutral state. I'm kind of like Switzerland in the Second World War. It's not like that, folks. It's actually that peace has to do with the fact it really stresses the harmony, like God brings me into relationship. It's not just that I'm not at enmity. It's that I'm God's friend. That's what's really being stressed. And in the second case, that subjective, it's not just the lack of anxiety that is so much stressed. It's the positive aspect of a state of well-being. Just the tranquility of soul that I feel when I'm assured of salvation through Christ. Well, here's the thing. The subjective peace that we're talking about here is my peace. That's what Jesus calls it, my peace. Go over to John 16:33. I want you to notice an essential characteristic of Jesus' peace. I have said these things to you, that in me you may have peace. You see that in him. This is his peace. In the world, you will have tribulation. But take heart, I've overcome the world. What I want you to see is this. Jesus' peace reigns in the heart of the child of God despite circumstances. Do you see that? I mean, that's a clear truth of 16:33. Why? Because he says, you know what? Guys, you are going to have tribulation in the world. But in me, you're going to have peace. You see what he's saying? He says, guys, the circumstances don't rule the day here. My peace trumps the circumstances. You guys may be going through difficulty. Guys, he's saying, I'm going to die like a criminal. I'm going to die on a cross like a criminal. And you know what? I'm going to suffer. I'm really going to suffer. I am going to be scourged. I'm going to be beaten. I'm going to be put on trial. I am going to be treated like inhumanly by the Jews, by the Romans, and they're going to kill me on that cross. And you know what? It's going to seem like defeat to you guys. And you know what? You guys are going to suffer too. You guys are going to be persecuted too. I'm not going to defeat Rome right now. I'm not going to set up a throne in Jerusalem. You guys are going to be put to it. You guys are going to go through tribulation. And you know what Jesus is saying? I promise you tranquility of soul, no matter what happens. Just a settled confidence, this settled rest that is going to fill these guys no matter what events they face. And you know what he's basically saying? With this peace that I give to you, you're not going to be victimized by every problem that comes along. Somebody's described this peace this way, as the heart's calm after Calvary's storm. I like that. MacArthur says it. I don't know if that was original with him or not. But here's what I would say. Here's the question. Do you know this peace? Despite circumstances in your life, do you know and enjoy? That's a better word. Do you enjoy it? Because it's an enjoyable thing. I mean, brethren, to be in a hard place, I'm in a really difficult place in life, And to have a peace that passes understanding sweep over your soul is not just, oh, well, you know, that's good. That is an enjoyable part of what it means to be a Christian. This peace which the Lord speaks. I just ask you this. What is it like in your life and in your heart at a time of crisis? That's the question. Are you helped by your Christianity? Folks, I mean, we might call it the tyranny of circumstances. They come, circumstances, problems and difficulties come into your life. And you know what? We can just find ourselves victim to these things, and we can find ourselves despairing and, oh no, what if this happens and that happens and this is terrible? And are you able to overcome the tyranny of these circumstances, or are you just driven to despair when things get hard? This is such a practical test for every one of us to look at. This, folks, do you realize what Jesus is doing? I mean, this is real. I'm giving you a piece. This is so far out of the realm of just theory. You know, we can theorize all day long. We've got all our notions and all our ideas. But the real issue is this. When you're in this position, when you're in that situation, when things are happening to you, you ever been there? It's like, wow, real difficulties come on my life. And you know what? I didn't do anything to deserve this. I didn't do anything to bring this on me. This came on me, and this is where I find myself. And when you find yourself in that position, in that situation, and things are happening to you, the question is this: what is your faith worth at that point? What is your Christianity worth at that point? Are you different from everyone else? Listen. So you can find this in the Psalms. Oh Lord, how many are my foes? You ever been in a place where a lot of people have been against you? If you've never been in that place, that is not a nice place to be in life. When you feel enemies are coming at you from every single direction, and sometimes God brings these storms upon us. How many are my foes, he says? Many are rising against me. Many say there's no salvation for him in his God. But you, O Lord, are a shield, my glory, the lifter of my head. I cried aloud to the Lord, and he answered me from his holy hill. And listen to this. I lay down and slept. I will not be afraid. This comes out of Psalm 3. You see what's happening? All these things are coming upon him. And he says, you know what, in the end, I can lay down and sleep. Do you know this perfect peace? It had to have come upon Peter with all reality. Do you ever consider that Peter has been captured by Herod, and Herod full well intends to do with Peter exactly what he did with James? And the angel, when he comes, actually has to kick Peter. You know why? Because he was sound asleep. If you were in prison, in the jail cell, and it was very likely you're going to be put to death very soon, maybe the next day, can you just sleep through the night? You sleep like a baby? I remember that there was a man, Christian man, who was on a piece of wreckage after the sinking of the Titanic, and he was going up and down in the waves. And he was on a sufficiently sized piece of debris, though it was being rocked by the waves, and the water was freezing. It killed a lot of people real fast. You can't survive long in those North Atlantic waters at that temperature. But he was up out of the water, and so he ended up living. And you know why? He was in a laying position. He wasn't sitting. And he said to the Lord, there in the waves of the North Atlantic, the darkness of that night, he said, Lord, there's no reason for both of us to stay awake. And he went to sleep. We're talking the peace that Christ gives to his people. That's what we're talking about. Do you remember Wesley? Wesley's on a ship. He's going to the United States. He only went to the United States once. Anybody remember where he went? He went to Georgia. You remember who he was on a ship with? Moravians. And they're in a storm. And guess what? Wesley was religious, but he wasn't saved yet. And they got, listen, you heard some of that cracks of thunder the other night? You get out in a storm and you get lightning flashing and you get the wind and you get these waves and you're in the kind of vessels that they would have been in this 18th century, out there in the midst of the Atlantic and a storm, and that ship is in real dire danger of going down. It is being rocked about by those waves. Oh, and those waves, they don't come in just perfect, rhythm. Those waves are coming, and sometimes from different directions, and they're huge, and all you need is you know about waves. All it takes, you've got various waves, and you've got various frequencies at which they're coming, and all it takes is a wave to cross another wave right at the perfect point and double the amplitude. And, it'll swallow a ship like that. And you just never know. And there they are. They're out there in the midst of all this. And the Moravians are singing, including the children. And they are at peace. And Wesley's terrified. Brethren, this is, Jesus calls it my peace. Why is it his peace? It's his peace for at least three reasons. One, because he gives it. It's his gift. He gives it by way of the Spirit. You remember there in John 14, you had verses 18 through 25, which was all about the giving of, 16 and 17, he's talking about the other helper and the Spirit of truth and how that's going to all come out in the Father and the Son dwelling with the people, this Spirit being the help. It's through this Spirit that Jesus gives this as a gift. The other thing is that it's based on his cross work. That's the second reason why it's his, because he basically makes it possible. Like we talked about, he puts the conscience at rest. It's his blood that washes the conscience and puts us at peace. And the third reason it's his is because he exhibited it. He experienced it. It was a peace that he himself had with his own Father. That would be a third reason. All you need to do is watch Jesus. Do you ever watch him in the pages of Scripture when he's confronted by his enemies, confronted by mocking and scourging and being put on trial and enemies coming against him? Have you ever recognized there's just an extraordinary calm upon the Lord Jesus? Have you just held him absolutely steady? Listen to this. Jesus was led to the governor's headquarters. I want to talk to you here about two examples. One pertains to Jesus, and the other one pertains to somebody who doesn't have this peace. But Jesus before Pilate, he was led to the governor's headquarters. Pilate went outside. What accusation do you bring? The Jews answer, if this man were not doing evil, we'd not have delivered him. This is John's account of Jesus' interaction with Pilate. So Pilate enters his headquarters, and he calls Jesus and says, are you the king of the Jews? Jesus answered, do you say this of your own accord? Now, folks, do you know, can you imagine scourging? Can you imagine if you're talking to a Roman leader that actually has the ability to have you scourged or not scourged? Have you ever seen the scourges? A stick with the leather straps off the end, and they would work pieces of bone and pieces of glass. And they said those Roman soldiers, they could disembowel a man very easy. They knew exactly how to work those. That was no walk in the park, folks. Imagine you're talking to a man that has the ability to have you scourged immediately. Like in the next 2 minutes, you could be down there with a Roman soldier. Not one of the little kids with a towel whacking you on the back. We're talking a Roman soldier. This guy's a trained warrior. And he's going to come out with this cat of three tails or whatever it is. And he is going to lay your back open. You imagine the first time you get hit by that. The first hit with it would have been pain beyond. Now, this is the guy you're talking to. And he has the ability to do that to you. And Jesus, just listen to Jesus knows full well. He can scourge me. Not only can he, he's going to. He can crucify me. No, not only can he, he's going to. These soldiers are going to beat me They're going to put a crown of thorns on my head. They're going to abuse me. They're going to spit on me. And listen to how he talks. Jesus answered, "Do you say this of your own accord, or did others say this to you about me?" Pilate answered, "Am I a Jew? Your own nation and chief priests delivered you over to me. What have you done?" Now remember from the other account, Matthew's account, Pilate's wife sent message to him. "I had a dream about this guy. Don't have anything to do with him." So weird things are happening as far as Pilate's concerned. Jesus answered, "My kingdom is not of this world. If my kingdom were of this world, my servants would fight. But my kingdom is not of this world." Pilate said to him, "So you're a king?" Jesus answered, "You say I'm a king. For this purpose I was born. For this purpose I've come into the world, to bear witness to the truth. Everyone who's of the truth listens to my voice." Pilate said to him, "What is truth?" Pilate went back out to the Jews and told them, I find no guilt in him. You have a custom that I should release one man at Passover. You want the king of the Jews?" They cried out, "No, Barabbas." Then Pilate took Jesus and flogged him. Just says that. Pilate took Jesus and flogged him. Okay. I know that on British ships, it was not unheard of. That was typically the punishment. You'd flog somebody. You know what happened when somebody got flogged? Was it? If you ever read or even watch some of the video accounts where they've tried to recreate John Newton, you know, John Newton, he came under the whip. And he did certain things on the ship. Do you know after they whipped him, I don't remember how many times. You know, in the Jewish, you could be beaten with sticks or whatever for like 40 times. I don't know how many times they did it on that boat, but you know, Newton was in bed for days after that, recuperating. He could barely move. And so this Jesus is flogged. The soldiers then twist together the crown of thorns, put it on his head, arrayed him in purple robe, saying, "Hail, King of the Jews," struck him with their hands. So now they're beating him. Pilate said, "See, I'm bringing him out to you that you may know that I find no guilt in him." Isn't that amazing? Don't you? Wouldn't you love to be working with somebody like that? Here it is. Oh, the more they find you, there's no guilt in you, the more they punish you. Jesus came out. I mean, there's just no justice. If ever you're wanting to feel like I'm the victim and, hey, I want some justice here, but nothing like that. Jesus came out wearing the crown of thorns, purple robe. Pilate said, "Behold the man." They cried out, "Crucify him." Pilate said, "Take him yourself. I don't find any guilt in him." He just keeps saying it. No guilt, no guilt. Jesus answered, "We have a law." Or Jews answered, "We have a law. According to that law, he ought to die because he made himself the Son of God." Now, listen to this. Pilate's not the guy getting beaten. Pilate's not the guy in danger of going to the cross. When Pilate heard this statement, he was even more afraid. You know what you never find in any of this account? It never says Jesus was more afraid. You know what Jesus is saying? My peace, guys. That's what I give to you. Like, I have this. I have a peace with my Father. You see, in the midst of this whole thing, Jesus is so calm. He's so controlled. Pilate's the guy that's disturbed. Pilate's the guy that's fearful. And then it says in verse 9, he entered headquarters and said to Jesus, "Where are you from?" See, now he's freaking out about this. "Where are you from?" "Son of God. And my wife sent me this word about having a dream about him." And then here's the thing. Jesus gave him no answer. Do you know how people are? They want to fight to justify themselves. No word. Pilate said, "You'll not speak to me?" Now he's all flustered. "Don't you know I have the authority to release you and authority to crucify you?" You know what this is? This is unlike anything he's ever experienced. Any other time he's had guys before him and he's talked about putting them out there to justice and being punished for their sins. Oh, you know, you ever been in a prison? Just go to the prison, guys, and talk to those guys about whether they're innocent or not. They're always victims. Somebody did this, and the court system did that, and that judge did this, and everybody's innocent. He says, "Don't you know I have the authority to release you, authority to crucify you?" Jesus answered, "You'd have no authority over me unless it had been given from above. Therefore, he who delivered you over to me has the greater sin." This is, folks, the peace he's exhibiting right here is the same peace that he's talking about in John 14:27. This is the personal peace that he himself experienced. Now, real people also get described in the parable of the soils. You remember the second kind of soil, the rocky? And here's what it says. Here's how Luke defines it. The ones on the rock are those who, when they hear the word, they receive it with joy, but these have no root. They believe for a while, and in time of testing, you want to get that? In time of testing, they fall away. What's testing? Think of that word. Something difficult comes into your life. It shows what a person's faith is really made of. You want to test a sword? How would you test it? How would you test the quality and the caliber of a sword? Well, you beat it against things. You put it through its paces. And you know what happens? You know what God is in the business of? Testing our faith. How does faith get tested? Through testing. Through trials. What is a trial? Something gets put on trial because it's being examined as to whether it actually is going to be vindicated, whether it's justified in the end, or whether it fails. It's not vindicated. It's condemned. I mean, this is the idea of trial. This is the idea of testing. It shows, proves the character, the nature of what our Christianity is all. We come along and we receive this with joy. And you know what? The gospel is such a message. It ought to be received with joy. But within what happens? Well, all of a sudden you get some testing. Some difficult thing comes into life. And what happens? I'll tell you exactly what happens, folks. People fall away when the trial comes and they don't experience the peace of Christ in the midst of it. That's exactly what happens. They're unhappy. They're frustrated. They're uncertain. They're fearful. An unquiet spirit takes them. Bro, folks, do you know what happens? Do you know what happens in the lost person? There's a desperate grasping after having their own way. They want things to be the way they want it. There's a grasping desire to have their own way. And when they don't get their own way, that's the test. That's a test. Well, I'll have Christianity as long as this is this way, and this is this way, and this is this way. But if God dare put anything into my life that doesn't make me happy, I'm out of here. And that's exactly what Jesus says happens. People run away from the Lord all the time. Why? Well, they got saved, and in the beginning, all was great and seemed... You know what? A lot of times when God's people, they get right with the Lord, and God makes a lot of things in their life right. A lot of things get corrected. Relationships get healed and all sorts of good... But you know what? First time God brings along something that the person didn't anticipate, didn't want to come, oh, that's where the test is. Does the peace of Christ still possess them then? Where they can look at this difficulty in life and say, the Lord's brought that, and this peace. What about when life gets difficult? And I mean really difficult. What then? What happens then? That's the test. Can you go through it untroubled? When all of a sudden what you expected, oh, you know how that happens. We have such expectations. And all of a sudden those expectations are just dashed. At that point in time, are you helped in your form of Christianity? I mean, are you confronted by the problem and yet you can sit down and a peace comes over you and there's still the joy of salvation? And it's like, that passes understanding. Like, how did that happen? Where did that come from? Do you enjoy the peace our Lord speaks of? I mean, don't you feel like there's little else that provides such a sure proof and thorough test of our faith? I mean, look, folks, it's one thing to say you believe. It's one thing to say you're a Christian. But that's not the same thing as fighting your faith. It's all of a sudden triumphant and your faith is victorious when these things are coming in upon you and you find yourself in a state of joy when everything seems to be against you. Folks, you know what? One of the things that it really shouldn't surprise us, but you know one of the things that we saw during COVID? If there was ever a season when I saw that many professing Christians do not have the peace of God, it was right then. That was a test, folks. That was a test. The people who fearfully cowered away. You know what? God's people didn't do that. God's people were at rest. And God's people just felt like, I saw it in my father-in-law. He said, you know what? God says we should meet, and I'm going to meet. God says I should be among God's people, and I'm going to be among God's people. Yeah, Pop, you're 95 years old. If anybody's going to be susceptible to COVID, and you know what? He caught it. We thought it was going to kill him. But he said, I would rather be among God's people and die. But you see, that's the peace. We saw a world that was absolutely frantic, People freaked out. And you know what? They were many of them were professing Christians. Fear, anxiety. And we just need to be honest, folks. Do you lack a sense of security when difficulties come? You have no anchor for your soul. When serious things come into your life, do you feel this foreboding? There's no rest? I remember a guy that fell away in our church in San Antonio. But you know what he said? He said he always had this feeling that the overpasses on the motorway were going to fall on him. You know what? That's not the peace that passes understanding. That's something. Have any of you ever heard Melody Green's testimony, Keith Green's wife? You know what she said in the days after that crash? She said her conscience bugged her. She was not at rest. You know, have any of you seen that or heard her testimony? She said she really began to question. You know what? You know what she felt in her own soul and anxiety that if she had been on that airplane, it would not have been well with her soul. You see, that is the peace that doesn't pass understanding. No peace. I remember Ruby, she always felt like, you know, out of all of our family, and her family, our children, everybody at that time, Charity had a profession, but Ruby always feared the death of her lost mother. And then, of course, her mom got sick, and she died. And Ruby felt like she was going to, like there was this tidal wave coming. And when her mom died, she just felt like she was just going to be engulfed by this massive wave of sorrow and darkness. And you know what? She waited for it and it never came. Just the opposite. You see, there's a peace that passes understanding. This is what we're being promised. These great calamities, the peace of God reigned. He says, peace I leave with you, my peace I give to you. It's not like the world gives, do I give to you. Let not your hearts be troubled, neither let them be afraid. I remember hearing Ryan Fullerton one time, he's a pastor in Kentucky, but he talked about going through all these difficulties in the ministry, and yet at the end of the day, being able to go home and play with his children. That's a peace, folks. There's a reality to that in life. I remember Brother Andy speaking about his wife. Maybe some of you have heard the testimony. You know, when they were in the Far East in China, all these children, especially these Tibetan children, Andy said, these little girls would come and they would sit on Rebecca's lap and they would just weep. Amma, don't let the Buddhist lamas take us away. Don't let them take us away. And Andy said, you know what? Those little girls, as they were growing up, 10, 12, 14 years old, he said, if those lamas would have taken those girls, they would have ended up being the playthings of the lamas. And you get these girls weeping, weeping, weeping. And people are saying to them, all you have to do is offer a little bribe. Andy said his wife would just be full of sorrow and weeping. He said one time he left the house and he just left her in just a ball of sorrow and tears. But he came home later and there she was. And she was resolute. And there was a confidence, and she was just engulfed in that peace of God. Brethren, this is a reality. We're not talking about anything fictitious here. And this is, brethren, what we have to recognize is this is literally one of the glories of the gospel, the peace of God that passes understanding. You can't understand it. You can't understand this peace. You can't imagine it. Yet it takes you. You experience it. It's real. And do you see what it means? What it means is this. The gospel basically says to us, your circumstances, you're going to have tribulation. Through much tribulation, you inherit the kingdom. You know what? Circumstances are going to come. Circumstances you fear, yep, some of them are going to come. Some of them aren't going to come. But you know what? The Bible doesn't concern itself with our circumstances. It concerns itself with us. The gospel doesn't care about your circumstances. It cares about you. And it basically says, come what may, I'm going to keep you in peace. No matter what comes, I have a peace, and I'm going to give it to you. You guys are going to have tribulation in the world, so be it. The triumph of it all is that whatever the circumstances, I'm going to keep you right. I'm going to keep you right where you need to be, peaceful in the midst of it all. The thing they fear? We fear things. And you know what? Sometimes they come. Being anxious doesn't help. But you know what? Whether the stuff you're anxious about comes or doesn't come, or it comes to fruition and it manifests itself, it's not really the issue. What he's saying is, guys, you're going to know the tranquility of soul whether the thing comes upon you or not. Peter, you're there in prison. You know what? Was he going to die just like James? He didn't know. But he went to sleep. Why? Because really, when God holds you in his arms in that peace, you can go to sleep. That's the victory we have in Christ. We're just trying. Brethren, this peace of Christ is a triumph in this life, despite whatever circumstances come upon us. One of the things that I think about in all of this, and I've thought about this through the years, I would never want to put a man in ministry unless a man's been in the oven. Because I want to see, does he have that peace? Is there an evidence of it? I've also thought this, no man's marrying my daughter unless I see him in the furnace. I want to see what he goes through. And I want to see what happens. Because you know what? There's a peace that passes understanding. I want to see whether it's there. That's the test. Jesus promises people that they're going to have this. I just say this. Are you helped by your Christianity? I want to see a guy suffer. I want to see a guy go through a difficult time in his season. Or I want to hear about it. And maybe I don't have to see it perfectly myself, but I want to know from other people, how did the person navigate this? But before I've mentioned to you the account of the Scottish Covenanter who received all these wounds in battles against the British soldiers, and he was thrown in a dungeon and piled high with chains, and he was laying there, and he had mortal wounds. He wasn't going to live. He wasn't going to survive. And his fellow Covenanters that were chained against the wall, he said to them, I don't know if I can bear this much longer. And as they inquired, it wasn't his pain that he was talking about. He said, I am feeling and experiencing such glory of God in my soul right now. It's overwhelming to me. I don't know if I can bear this much longer. And very soon he died. He was off to glory. But folks, there is a peace. We sang the song. Do you know the song behind Horatius Spafford? First, he lost a son in Chicago. I forget at what point the fire took place in Chicago, but I know he lost many of his properties there. But he lost a son, I believe, to cholera, if I'm not mistaken. And then he feels like in all the difficulties of all these situations, he puts his four daughters and his wife on a ship, sends them over here somewhere, and en route, there's some kind of collision or something. The ship sinks. His wife is saved. She gets and sends a telegraph back, saved alone. And so you know the story. He's on the ship. He's sailing over to meet his wife. And the captain tells him right where the ship sunk and his four daughters were lost. And he wrote those words. When peace like a river attendeth my way, when sorrows like sea billows roll, whatever my lot, thou hast taught me to say, it is well. It is well with my soul. I remember one time going up to Michigan when my dad died. And there was a certain thing with the will. And if you were in it, you'd recognize. Just have your parents die and get in a will situation with your siblings. God gave me such a peace. It was supernatural. I remember another time. I told some of you the story about the first time I ever preached. I was absolutely terrified. The moment I stepped behind the pulpit, there was a peace that was supernatural. I remember another time somebody confessed something to me that was extremely difficult to hear and to be forgiving about. And I just remember being consumed by a sense of peace that was unearthly. I remember when doctors told Ruby she had a mass in one of her breasts, and we basically laid it down. Her sister had breast cancer. Now she does. This is something God's going to take us through. And there was just such a steadiness in the midst. It really surprised both of us. Lloyd-Jones tells a story about folks, I think it was John and Catherine Carpenter. I'm just kind of guessing a little bit at their first names. But there was these two. They had a daughter, and she was getting sick. They prayed for her. For 6 weeks, they prayed for her. And you know what? They could not pray, neither of them, praying separately. They could not pray, God, heal our daughter. They felt like they couldn't. All they could pray is, Lord, if it's your will, heal our daughter. And then 6 weeks later, she died. And separately, they both said, we felt we could not pray that God would spare our daughter. And when she died, they both came together separately and just said, we are experiencing such a calm, such a peace in our souls. Folks, this is this peace. And you know, here's the thing that Jesus says. It's not as the world gives. I give peace the way I give peace, not as the world gets peace. You know what? Ruby and I were visiting my mom's church one time. There's reasons why I visited this service, but my mom basically was in basically your British Anglican church. And they had a priestess. And so they have this woman up there. And it's like Ruby and I were talking about it. I forget what happened. One or two people in the church died. The church was basically made up of old people, and they lived in the mountains of North Carolina. And this priestess was up there and making these announcements about how this person died, that person died, and somebody else was sick. And she just said, she finally said, she like made this pronouncement. She said, these bad things just need to stop. You know how the world gives peace like that? You know, you're sitting there thinking, well, that did a lot of good for the people. What, we have hard things happening to the families, and what am I going to do? Stand up here and just say, they need to stop. I mean, what's that? What good does that do? You know what? You know how the world gets peace? Just by denial. You say stupid things like that, empty things like that. Or you just say to somebody, it's going to be okay. What do you mean? How do you just say that? What do you mean it's just going to be okay? Who are you saying that to? If you're saying it to a lost guy, no, it's not going to be okay. I mean, the only time you can really say that is if somebody's a Christian, but that doesn't even necessarily mean that the situation they're going through is okay. That may be a really difficult situation. What are you going to say? Somebody's wife dies, somebody's husband, well, it's going to be okay. Well, yeah, when you die and you're going to go to glory, and then, but you know what? You've got a lot of suffering ahead. I mean, you know, one of the things about that the peace of Christ does is it really hits us with truth. It always deals with the facts. It's not some imagined thing. It's not some state of denial. You know, I just recount this story again. When I was working as an engineer, I'm in, you know, the place employed, I don't know, it's on between maybe 1,000 people. And I was in the cafeteria, and the cafeteria at any one time might have 500 people in it. And, you know, all these people were in there, and the cafeteria is full, and there's a guy that I worked with who worked in the machine shop. He was sitting next to me. And I said, Steve, you ever think in 100 years all these people are going to be dead? He looked at me. He said, this with disgust. He said, I try not to think about that. Yeah, that's how the world brings peace. Ignorance. Isn't that what they do? I mean, when I was lost, if I went to a funeral, guess what the first thing I wanted to do when I got out of the funeral? Shake myself like Samson, forget about it, let's go get drunk. Right? Anybody else there? Maybe you didn't live that kind of life, but that was me. Why? Don't want to think about it. Stick my head in the sand. Got to be denial. You know what? God says through the prophet Jeremiah, they've healed the wound of my people lightly, saying peace, peace, when there is no peace. You know what false religion does? You know what's so sorry about the Muslim deal? Oh, Allah, he's merciful. That's a lie. There's no mercy aside from the atonement of Christ. That's just a lie. It's just peace, peace, when there is no peace. All those imams. And go look at, like I said before, go look at the Muslims' eyes when they're old. There's no peace. That's a fake. It's ignorance. You know what people try to do in this world? They try to manipulate their circumstances and keep them protected and couple it with massive amounts of ignorance. And that's really what they do. That's what the people all around us are doing. All the people here in Manchester, they're just going around. The ungodly try to surround themselves with just positive positive thoughts, positive circumstances, protect their circumstances, protect them. I got to protect my money. I got to have retirement. I got to have my savings. I got to protect it all. I got to have alarm systems, and I got to have retirement, and I got to make sure I eat right and do the right health things, and everything's protected. Why? Because you're trying to protect everything the way it is when you feel like it's good. Get away, protected from the troubles coming in, and you're just surrounded by lots of ignorance, for refuse to face the facts. I was just reminded lately about the Simon and Garfunkel song where they say, "Hello, darkness, my old friend." Now, besides all the reasons as to what that meant to those guys, it's like darkness is no friend. Ignorance is no friend, folks. Any peace based on ignorance is just, you're cutting your own throat. That's what the vast majority of people are doing. They just would rather not know. And then you have entertainment, fun, laughter, pleasure. What does all that do? You know what that does? That numbs us for a moment. You remember back during the Great Depression? No, none of us remember that, but you know about it. But in the United States, you know what was really big at that time? Movies. Probably over here, too. Listen to this. I came across this. How movies got us through the Great Depression. This is from a U.S. perspective. The movie industry triumph in the 1930s lay in giving the public what it wanted to see. Its product, get this, was therapeutic diversion. Don't you love that? Just put that name on it. It's therapeutic. That almost sounds good. You know what it is? It's deception, folks, that leads people to hell. Because what does it do? Listen, therapeutic diversion for millions of Americans who needed to get away from their troubles. By providing this crucial relief, American film reached a pinnacle of influence at a time when most other industries were struggling mightily. You see what's implied? People needed to get away from their troubles. As though movies actually did succeed in helping people get away from their troubles. But you know what? Jesus' peace is not like that. Because you know what happens when you walk out of the theater and get hit by reality again? There's your troubles again. It's the same with drugs and alcohol. That's what people go to them for. Why? They make you forget for a moment. But you know what? There's a euphoria that we get from certain things, but it's only just passing sin. It's like the pledges of sin. It's only for a season. These things just pass away. You know what happens? We try to imagine a given moment of happiness, and then we imagine that it's going to go on forever. And what we try to do is we try to protect it for as long as possible. I mean, if you really just say to somebody, "Hey, do you realize we're all dead 100 years from now?" Well, I try not to think about it. Well, what are they trying to think about? Well, they're trying to think, well, you know, I feel pretty good when I go home and I'm camp out in front of my TV and I have a beer in hand and I got a wife and I got my family over here and I got friends and we do this and there's vacations lined up. And see, you try to preserve that for as long as possible, And darkness is your friend. You don't want to think about too far in the future. You're just going to protect this. You think you're somehow invincible. You're just going to go ahead with this as long as you can. But you know what? Jesus' peace, it's not based on that. Man is so expert at just creating his own fake false idea of euphoria, never facing the real problem, only just seeking to mitigate the symptoms. This world's peace, folks, is worthless. Do you realize if every person up and down these streets right now actually had a DVD that they could pop into their computer that would show them what's going to happen to them in the next 100 years? I mean, exactly. It would show them how they're going to get old, they're going to get sick, one day that phone call's coming, your wife is dead, your wife's left you, you've got cancer, heart attack, straight line, all the things in this world that we try to hold on. You see, the people of this world, the way the world gives peace, it's just that the devil's behind it. It's just promises that, well, it's going to be forever. Just don't worry about it today. Even if you recognize 100 years from now, it's not going to happen tomorrow. It's not going to happen the next day. But you know what? You know what the truth is? One of these tomorrows, people do wake up in hell. One of these tomorrows, you do come face to face with God on Judgment Day, and He is a very holy God. And He does throw body and soul into hell. And Jesus said, you know what, that is a good anxiety, and that is a good fear. You ought to really have that. And people try not to think about that. People face the facts. You know this idea of their artificial peace that they've set up would be instantly gone. You know what Ruby and I did 5 years ago? Our children pitched in, and they got us a cruise into the Caribbean for our 25th wedding anniversary. Do you know what that was like? Well, for one thing, Ruby and I were really limited on what we could do because we didn't go to the casino. We didn't hang out in all the bars. We tried one show one night, and we had to leave it, like, I don't know, 10 minutes in. And anyway, basically, we hung out in the room, and we went to the gym, and we hung out, like, up top. And anyways, we had a balcony, so you'd just stand there and just watch the ocean. But it was nice, and we could read. But you know what we recalled about it? It was like a 5 day or 7 day, I forget what it was. But when we first got there, man, everybody was excited. I mean, they were just festive. Do you know the last day as we were going into port? There was a feeling of death. It was like we saved up for our cruise and now it's over. The emptiness on these people's faces, and it was everywhere. It was wherever you looked. We were down at the cafeteria and we were eating, and everybody, it was like we looked around, you just couldn't believe it. Every single face. It's like just depression said it. Not with us. We're happy. Why? God gave us a time away. We're thankful for it. Now we're going back to life and we're kind of refreshed. And, you know, the expectation in the end is glory. And we've got this, it's all totally different. Folks, this is how the world gets it. Jesus' peace. It brings us face to face with the facts. You know what he does? Folks, we're just about done. I know it's hot, but Jesus basically brings us face to face with the true facts. He confronts us with the true cause of our unrest, why our consciences aren't at peace. He deals with us about sin and death and judgment and God being a holy God and hell and forever. And that if we come to Christ and we confess our sins, I mean, he's the very one who's the Savior who's paid it all. His own lifeblood there on Calvary's cross. I mean, he offers this. We can stand before God as if we've never sinned. I mean, when that blood washes our conscience clean, like I was talking about in the Lord's Supper, I mean, we just feel it. It doesn't matter what happens. It doesn't matter if you're at the end of the cruise. It doesn't matter if the thing you feared comes upon you. It's like, yeah, this may be a road that's going to be really difficult to walk. But you know, you have so many people that are just living for the happiness that can be got. They're living for the things in this world. And so what do? Everything is bent on trying to protect what they have and what they believe makes them happy in this world. That's thus all the health insurance and the life insurance and all the things with money. There's a real trust in the money. Why? Because that's felt like that. That's what can keep me safe in my little bubble. You know what happened when we were in Wales? We were sitting in the restaurant. And there was this lady, you talk about a pathetic scene. She'd come in there with a walker. She sat down at breakfast table and she set up a picture of her obviously deceased husband on the table. And we looked over at her. She was sighing. She was weeping. She was wiping the tears away. You know what happens when you live for the things in this world? And we don't know anything about her. We don't know her spiritual condition, but it's such a pathetic picture of people in this world. You live for these things and then they're gone. And then what is there? Emptiness, depression. But you know what? As bad as it gets, I can even put me in prison. But what? I have glory ahead. Paradise with Christ forever. And what are you going to say to the Christian that's going to if we really think right, Jesus, he had this. You remember, for the joy that was set before him, he endured the cross, despising the shame. You know what? I can despise the sufferings of this world. I can despise the shame. I can despise the most difficult things that come upon me in this life with regards to my health or things taken away from deprivation, things that I feel like do make life more joyful here, but if any of them get taken away, brethren, you know what? It is not easy for us to leave our children back in the U.S. At times that was like tearing the flesh off of us. But Ruby and I could still be at peace. Why? Because our life isn't built around whether we have our children and grandchildren close or not. That isn't it. And you know, I could think about the trial that it would be if I lost Ruby or if she lost me. But the fact is, Christ is more important to us, and he offers us promises that in the end, we'll see each other again. We'll worship Christ together. I mean, the fact is, the peace of Christ is based on reality. The peace of the world is based on just ignorance. It's not valid. It's empty. Troubled heart? Oh, why? We haven't faced the facts. Been seeking refuge where there isn't any. Proverbs says, what the wicked dreads will come upon him. Would you escape the vanity of it all? Well, there it is, Christ's peace. Peace I leave with you, my peace. You know what I imagine as I was looking at this? I was thinking, later, the disciples really didn't know what Jesus was about to face. But later, especially after the Spirit was given and their eyes were open to everything, can you imagine Peter thinking back after he came to realize, wow, Jesus, when he was speaking to us there in that upper room about his peace, he knew he was ready to face the scourge, that trial, the cross, the wrath of God. And I don't doubt he just remembered the look on Jesus' face, the tone in his voice. And when he said, my peace, and what he would have remembered is just how Jesus exuded peace. And then thinking later, I just imagine him sitting around the campfire, you know, as he traveled the world preaching the gospel, and just thinking, Jesus was so at rest. Even with all the horrors of the cross, he knew were coming. Well, why? For the joy set before him, he could despise it all. And that's where we're at. Brethren, if you're a Christian, you have to remember this. He said, don't be anxious. Don't be afraid. In other words, I'm going to give you my peace, but there is still a place where you need to not be afraid. What does that mean? Well, it means you need to apply the truths to your own mind that back up that peace. You need to think about reality. Anytime you get in a difficulty in the Christian life, if you're full of anxiety, it's because you're not thinking right. If you really see it the way that you ought to see it, according to the facts, then that peace that passes understanding should just grab you, hold you, keep you. That's the promise of Scripture. As long as your mind is stayed upon Him, that's the problem. You get into difficulties in what your mind gets trained on, the circumstances, not on Him and His promises. And Father, I pray that this just the church would come all the more to know the realities of this peace, Christ's peace, that's promised in the gospel. Or do we want it? Christ.